We're back with the Evolve Your Brand podcast. I'm your host, Dave Gold. If you're not already friends with me or a part of my free Facebook group, go and send me a message, David S. Goldstein. And I've got a special guest here today on the podcast. We just met in Medellin, and he is very interesting in the fact that he is leading the cause in stem cells and facilitating stem cell treatments for high performers, for athletes, for incredible people from all over the world are coming to him in Medellin, the CEO of Blue Phoenix Stem Cells. Welcome to the podcast, John Tarantino.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Why don't you give the audience a little backstory on who you are, you know, where you grew up, and what got you into stem cell research?
Sure. So I am from Wellesley, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. Grew up there. Went to school in Philadelphia, UPenn. Went to New York after that. Worked in real estate finance for about a decade. All in New York. Then got into e-commerce. Was deep into that for a while. Began to travel around quite a bit. After spending so much time in New York, wanted to live around at other places. So I spent, a few years traveling around Latin America, Buenos Aires, Mexico City, Tulum. And about a year ago or a year and a half ago, I ended up in Medellin, Colombia, not really expecting to stay all that long, but little by little things just came together. And started really like living here, made a really good friend group. And then, as you know, the business came together bit by bit. And and we've been live for a few months now. So that's the very high level background.
Okay. Beautiful. I've been to some of those places. We met in Medellin. I'm in Mexico City. But I want to hear more about, before we get into the digital nomad lifestyle, stem cells. So why don't you break down for the audience, what is the benefit of, you know, having a stem cell treatment, who would that be for, and what that process would be like?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. So stem cells are a really interesting, really exciting new treatment. And what makes one of the things that makes stem cells so interesting is that they have the ability to differentiate into any different type of cell in the body. And so there are lots of different applications. Right now we're focusing on three main ones. The most popular is orthopedic. And I'll point out, like, I actually started off as a patient before I had received stem cell treatments before I opened up this clinic. And just one example, so I had a stem cell treatment on this wrist, which I had broken badly about 5 years ago, and had low level chronic pain, chronic inflammation. And after the treatment, it took, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, and then no more pain as I moved the wrist around, which is a very nice little boost of quality of life. Stem cells can aggressively, when injected locally, aggressively shut down inflammation, regenerate soft tissue, regenerate connective tissue. So it's a really powerful healing mechanism in that sense. Another treatment that's very popular, which I've also received, is called a general treatment, and that's via IV. So the stem cells are delivered directly into your bloodstream. That obviously gets circulated throughout your body. The stem cells, they're an aggressive anti-inflammatory. And if there's any part of your body that is in particular need, basically assistance with healing, the stem cells will preferentially redirect themselves into that area. That's a very interesting treatment as well. And then the last thing we do, we actually do cosmetic treatments. That's either in the face or in the scalp. So they can actually help to thicken up thinning hair, which is pretty interesting in a very natural way, or injected into the face. They can stimulate collagen production, fill in fine lines, kind of rejuvenate the face in a very natural way. So those are the applications that we're doing right now. There are additional applications that we'll be adding later, but we didn't want to, we're relatively new, smaller clinic. And so, we didn't want to just dive into absolutely everything at once. And but yeah, it's a really interesting, really powerful treatment. I think anybody, you know, with a serious orthopedic injury, or to someone who is very interested in their health, or you know, maybe they want to do something more cosmetic, it's a really interesting treatment that's out there right now.
Mm-hmm. And you know, before the conversation we're having today, I was listening to Dr. David Sinclair talking about stem cells. And okay. He said one fundamental drawback to using stem cells to live longer is they don't often find their niche or their resting place. So would you agree with that or disagree, or where would you be at on that?
Not entirely, and I'm not. I would have to probably hear it for myself as far mm-hmm. as what exactly he means by that. But the stem cells, I mean, I also wonder what type of treatments he's talking about, because like just saying stem cells, that's actually doesn't give you that much information. So there are different types of cells and different sources, and so the reason why clinics like mine are around. Clinics in Mexico, Panama, Colombia, it's because we can actually offer more advanced treatment than is available in the United States, interestingly enough. So you've got professional athletes and other people with plenty of means that can afford any treatment, you know, but they end up traveling down, you know, to those countries. And the reason being, so you can get a stem cell treatment in New York. What you're getting is autologous stem cells from your own tissue. So that means that they're extracting your own stem cells from either your belly fat or your bone marrow, extracting them and then re-injecting them back into the site of injury or the site of treatment. There are some limitations there. One, that's an invasive procedure. But I think more importantly, you're very limited by the number of cells that you can extract, because exactly that, you obviously can't re-inject more cells than you extract originally from the body. So you're typically looking at, you know, between 5, 6, 7 million cells when done that way. Whereas for us, a typical orthopedic treatment is 50 million cells. So it's a lot more powerful. Or when we do a systemic treatment, the general IV, we do 150 million cells. So much larger numbers of cells. I'm making an educated guess here, but as far as what he's talking about, he might very well have been talking about autologous treatments in which the number of cells is smaller, and so there is less margin for error, so to speak. But regardless if that's what he meant, I do think that's a very important distinction, and it also just explains, you know, like why I'm down here doing my thing, and why, you know, there are other clinics that have popped up throughout Latin America. And like, and why people travel, like why they don't stay in the US or Canada to do this kind of treatment.
Well, with that being said, it sounds like there's a lot of misinformation or people not fully understanding the treatment or the research fully. So I'm wondering, are there any misconceptions out there around stem cell treatment?
Just that not everyone, like when they Google stem cells, they might not even be aware of the different sources of cells. And so, to be even more clear, so what we use umbilical cord derived cells. So those are they're taken from an umbilical cord. You know, by definition, they are 0 days old. And then the cells are cultivated from those preserved umbilical cords. So people might not be aware of the difference. You know, or if they get a treatment in New York, they might not be aware, you know, they're getting a 5 million cell treatment, you know, versus a 50 million cell treatment at a good clinic in Latin America. Another thing that some people still think of, and this is from 20 years ago, but the original technology was actually to extract stem cells from frozen embryos, which then needed to be destroyed. So that was, this is back, it was like George W. Bush, like in his presidency. And as you can imagine, that was hugely controversial. So a lot of people who don't follow these things, that they might have remembered the controversy from decades ago. That is not what we do, to the best of my knowledge. That's not practiced anymore. But regardless, they have a very controversial history in the United States which I believe informs the current policy of only allowing autologous stem cell treatments versus umbilical cord derived.
So just to clarify, stem cells are partly legal in the US.
Certain types of treatments are legal. Certain types of cells are legal. Certain types are not.
Yeah. Now, you often get told that you look really young, right? That was one of the things that you told me when we met. And I'm wondering, it must not only be the stem cells and some of the other stuff that we'll discuss on this podcast. What would you say are your daily habits that you do each day to stay young, or even on a weekly or monthly basis?
Yeah, sure. I'm super into all things like health, wellness, performance, et cetera. Starting obviously with the basics, right? Work to get enough sleep and really kind of schedule that in every day, just because I find that, and I think this is true for pretty much everybody, right? People are not at their best when they're not sleeping really well. I have an Oura Ring, which I like a lot, which gives me more information, not just on the number of hours slept, but also time spent in REM sleep, deep sleep. From there, yeah, I'm pretty particular about what I eat. Basically meat, vegetables, and some starches. So I keep it pretty simple, really high quality meats, seafood too. I do regular blood work every 3 or 4 months to really just to see where I'm at, to see if things are looking good or if I'm deficient in anything. And then I supplement intelligently from there. I'm weight training, do that. That's the really my number one priority as far as training goes. So I'm in the gym 3 or 4 days a week, pretty much without fail. There's a lot of things. There's so many complementary things one can do, right? I try to get some heat, cold exposure when I can. I did an ice bath last night, for example. Try to get some sun, although that's something that I can definitely improve on. But a certain amount of sun on the body every day without sunscreen, I think, is very important. So there's some of the big, and then there's all kinds, depending on how deep people want to go. Like there are all kinds of more advanced treatments. Stem cells are a great example. We offer a lot of other things at the clinic, advanced IVs, peptides, all kinds of stuff. So yeah, it can get, even for me, it can get a little overwhelming, kind of all the treatments that are available. And like, I'm just so curious about everything. But those are some of the basics.
Nice, that's a lot of stuff. And I know that you are really health conscious. And I'm not sure who's watching our podcast today, but if there's any fitness coaches or anyone that's interested in fitness, feel free to reach out to John and connect with him. I wanted to ask you real quick, because I remember being in your flat and seeing you had a huge supplement collection. So which supplements do you use on a daily basis? Which ones do you recommend? And which ones, do you not use anymore? You've kind of like grown out of them.
Oh yeah, sure. So I think like the most important ones that I take. So I take, it's a combined supplement in a single capsule. It's vitamins A, D, and K. Okay. Almost everybody is vitamin D deficient, in my opinion, just because people rarely see the sun. They're fully clothed. And then when they do go out in the sun, they slather sunscreen on their face. And so they're getting almost zero natural sun exposure. So vitamin D, vitamin A, just because that's a tough one to get in your diet. The best source of that, I believe, is liver and other organ meats, but not a lot of people are regularly consuming those kinds of foods. Also, magnesium, I think, is an important one. I think that's another one most people are deficient in. It's just hard to get enough of it in your diet. Partly because of mineral depleted soil. Outside of that, fish oil is a good one. So that's like omega-3s. A lot of people have an imbalance between omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids in their body. Those are probably my three favorites. And by the way, and those are all super basic. There are plenty of other supplements that are a little bit, maybe a little bit more fringe, but I think probably those three are the best place to start. For most anybody,
What are your thoughts on multivitamins or probiotics?
Yeah, I think so probiotics, I think in theory are a great idea. It's hard to know though, because it's like you have all these probiotics and they all have these different strains in them. And it's hard to know what strain will be best for your body. So like I feel like probiotics are there's just a lot of guesswork. You know, one thing, it's actually funny that I was thinking of ordering. So I found a really good source of raw grass-fed kefir here in Medellin. I'm probably going to order some more today. That's such a good source of healthy bacteria for your gut. So that's one thing that my bias would be to consume more foods like that rather than take probiotics. But I'm not against them by any means either.
Yeah, kimchi, kefir, kombucha. Gut health probiotics. Yeah. And I've definitely learned a lot about those because I dealt with IBS symptoms for like a good year to two. So that really helped taking kefir and probiotics. Awesome. Well, if we shift over a little bit from the things that you can buy over the counter in the store to something that you can't get in the store itself, you sometimes might even need to go to the jungle to find it. Something that really surprised me when we met was you told me that you didn't have much experience with drugs or psychedelics until just recently, but over the past, I don't know, you're going to have to fill me in, X amount of months or years, you had many ayahuasca experiences. So can you tell me a little bit about how that came to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I first did ayahuasca here outside of Medellin, and it was March of 2021. I had thought about it and I had looked into it for probably 5 years before
then. You had never really done any other drugs up until then?
So
medicine, like a psychedelic psychotherapy, you know.
I think that the distinction is important just because they are non-toxic and non-addictive.
It's so true, and you bring up a great point because up until this year in my life, I didn't realize that there was a difference between psychedelics as like a drug versus as a therapy. And so maybe you can clarify for the audience, because there is a huge misconception there that's pushed by our governments and a lot of different, you know, pharmaceuticals as to why these things have not come to market. But fortunately, I'm pretty sure in Colorado, they just legalized magical mushrooms, right? So psilocybin and maybe DMT. So, well, you know, what happened? You've been researching this stuff for 5 years. Why did you decide to try it out?
I don't entirely know how to answer that other than it just felt like the right time, right? So with ayahuasca, it piqued my interest for a long time, but I didn't really know anyone that had done it. I thought it was interesting as a concept, but I didn't know enough about it. I didn't know if it was something that could be helpful to me. I mean, the background, so like I was very health conscious and I was doing all of these things to really dial in my health, you know, getting enough sleep, eating the right things, supplementing what I needed to, meditating, training, all this stuff. But still, I just couldn't shake, like I just had this kind of sense of apathy and around everything. And it just, my mindset wasn't very good and I just couldn't fix it and I didn't know why. And so I started to hear about how psychedelics had been can be used therapeutically in these instances. And I actually started in probably 2 years ago with ketamine. The reason I did that, so that's the one that's legal in the United States. And so I did that because so that's actually used as an anesthetic commonly in the US. And so for that reason, doctors can prescribe it off label. And so that's why you see like their ketamine clinics popping up, like physical spaces. I couldn't do it. It was in the middle of COVID. So they had to send it to me. I couldn't go to a clinic. They're all closed. But that was the first one I tried. Again, purely just legality. I didn't really feel like buying anything that was illegal in the US and didn't even know where to get it anyways. And so started that way. Later on in, so I tried in South America. Mushrooms were the second thing that that I had tried. And both of those were interesting to me. Like they were definitely like they would alter my perception. And I wouldn't say that they were hugely powerful. And that's not even a comment on the medicines as a whole. That's just in my limited experience with those two. And then I discovered ayahuasca here. That's a very powerful experience. Medicine. Yeah, for sure. And went to it was a 5-day retreat, 4 ceremonies. It took a while for me to connect. I remember it wasn't until the 4th ceremony that it really connected, but super powerful. And
how many times have you done ayahuasca now, if you care to share?
Sure. 41.
Wow. And so if someone says to you, like, you know, isn't that enough, John? Like, haven't you done it enough? Haven't you figured out your answers? What would you say to them?
So whatever enough is, is only known by each individual person. So, 0 times could be enough for one person. 1 time could be enough for another, 10 times another, 1,000 for another. So that's entirely individual. People are free to think whatever they want, but I completely disregard anyone's opinion as far as like what they think is best for me or for anyone else on this topic. It's very clear for every person. And so you either you're called to it or you're not. And that's true on a continuous basis. So I first felt that calling, I guess, in a sense, 5 years ago when I started to look into it, and then felt it a lot stronger. Leading up to 1.5 years ago, my first retreat. And then it was continued to be very strong in the beginning, and now it's still there, but not just not as much. And so it's actually funny. I was supposed to be on a retreat right now. I initially signed up for another one this week. And I made the call that I have enough going on. I want to focus on my own things. I don't really feel like spending 4 or 5 days, really intense days drinking Aya. So that's where I'm at, but I'll continue to do it whenever it feels right, purely guided by my intuition.
And do you have an experience that stood out since you've done it 41 times? Like, was there an experience that you would say was up there as like one of the best? To piggyback off of that, is there a shaman or healer or a place that you would recommend other people to go to do ayahuasca?
Totally. So it's kind of a hard one to answer, the first question, just because there's so many. But the first thing that comes to mind, I came, I think I told you this outside of an interview, but so I came very close to dying twice in my life. Extremely close. Once age 10, once age 19. And the one age 10, so that was appendicitis, which was misdiagnosed. I was basically dying and I was sent home from the hospital by a doctor who made a grave mistake. That one, I'm reminded of it every day just because I see there's a scar, a small scar in my stomach where it was ultimately taken out. But I had no idea how deep that trauma was. And it makes sense. I mean, it was a very vulnerable age, 10 years old, and basically, came, within a hiccup of dying. And so the Aya one just helped me recognize just how deep that trauma was. And then it helped me get over it. I even remember, and so it was a common theme. It came up on a lot of ceremonies. It did not get fully processed, fully healed. And it was done visually, which is unusual for me. Ayahuasca, I don't have many visuals. I still remember it was ceremony number 33 when that got completely processed. That was, I suppose that probably stands out as perhaps the most powerful ceremony out of them all.
And was that in a specific place, or is there a specific shaman or healer that if someone is interested in your story and wants to have their own experience that you would recommend them go to?
Yeah, absolutely. So of the 41 ceremonies that I've done, 39 of them have been at La Ceiba, which is it's outside of Medellin, about an hour outside. So that's my spot. That's where I drink Aya. It's really cool. Really cool finca, not too far outside the city. I know it's a Canadian guy that owns it and runs it. Does a really good job. They have the musicians there are incredible, and I'll point out that's actually part of the medicine. So it's really I mean the ayahuasca
Icaros. The Icaros, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it just like it influence the music is it's part of it. It's part of the process. And they do such a good job with the music there. So I
have a neighbor. My neighbors are from Argentina and Brazil, the two countries I want to visit in 2023. And the Argentinian has a friend who is actually singing at ayahuasca ceremonies in Argentina, sound healing. And so, yeah, I can kind of feel that there is just this power with voice, with music. I also had someone on my IG podcast who was a music therapy coach. So, you know, what makes the music so powerful during an ayahuasca ceremony?
Oh man. So it's like, I will try my best to explain it. Though I'm not sure I'm going to be able to. So it's just perfect. So oftentimes they drink as well. So they're actually,
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So like they have it. Yeah. So they are very much like in tune with everything that's going on in the ceremony. And, it's funny, I mean, like, cause like some of the songs are more, not somber, that's not the right word, but like some of them are more, let's just say like more kind of gentle, slower paced. Other ones are much more energetic, more vocals. It just varies and it depends. But I swear it's always the right song. It's always the right one. Because it's the type of music that like I had never really heard before. I mean, it's simple in the sense that, I mean, typically it's a guitar, like a drum or two and vocals. Mm-hmm. So it's simple in that sense, but it's its own very unique style. And it's different. Like I remember one time, usually they have the same musicians at the Ceiba. So I thought I'd heard everything. And then I went to this one ceremony and they brought in, it was only for one, but it was just different musicians. And so they played some different songs, right? And then I remember there was a female singer. So most of the singing is done by men, at least at La Ceiba, most of the time. But it was a female singer and like with this like really just, you know, like powerful voice. And then so like that just kind of, that just has a different effect. On one's journey, just different sounds, different energies from the vocal perspective. It's really cool. We're actually doing, I'm not sure the status of it, but we are, me and some people, we're helping to sponsor recording an album, some of the musicians. Yeah, because like it's music that is just not, I mean, you can find it like on YouTube and stuff, like if you Google around like ayahuasca medicine music or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's not commonly found. Like if you were to go on like Spotify or something, like I don't like there aren't that many professional recordings, if any. So yeah.
Awesome. All right. So my final question to you today is going to be about the digital nomad journey. So It's taken you from Mexico City, Tulum, Buenos Aires, and now you're in Medellin. So
yeah,
that was where we met. What are your thoughts so far on living in Medellin, the pros and the cons, and why have you decided to stay?
Yeah, so Medellin's great. So I've liked all of the places that I've lived that you just mentioned. I've liked them all. Medellin is my favorite out of all of them, which is why I opted to stay here. But yeah, it's just a great place. So for one, I like the size of the city. So for me, it feels very manageable. I mean, I spent 15 years in New York, in downtown Manhattan. So it's a big enough city that it has enough kind of big city things, but still feels very manageable, number one. Two, there's a lot of green. So like it feels like you're in nature. It's a mountain city. you've both within the city, it's just very green. And then, you know, you can go, you know, like 15 minutes, 20 minutes out, right? You've just got these like gorgeous rolling hills, which is really cool. The weather is very nice year round, provided you don't mind a bit of rain here and there.
Eternal spring is what some would say.
Yeah, the land of eternal spring, or city of eternal, whatever they call it. Yeah. So yeah, weather is
You managed to stay out of trouble with the ladies?
I was just about to add. I don't know what that trouble means, but I was at yes. And then the women, are we not there? Yeah, are gorgeous. There are many, yes, gorgeous women here as well, which is obviously great.
You've managed to stay safe, because a lot of people have like safety concerns coming to Medellin in Colombia.
Oh yeah, I've never had any sort of issue. No, I mean, like, be smart. I mean, I'm always cognizant of these things.
You're not going out and meeting girls at the club. You know, you're not one of those guys. And that's the thing, is that I just wanted to ask that question and bring that to light, if there are any guys that did watch this episode, because I was just down there as well and nothing happened to me. But there are a lot of stories, and you got to be careful and you got to be smart. But if you are, you can have a really good experience in Medellin, Colombia. And you know, John recommends it, I recommend it. If you guys resonated with this episode and you are into stem cells, into psychedelics, into digital nomad lifestyle and traveling around the world, and you want to connect with John or myself, feel free to reach out. What's going to be the best way for them to connect with you? Do you have an Instagram handle?
Yeah, I was going to say, Instagram is the best way. Shoot me, my profile is public. DM me. It's just, it's John S. Tarantino, JohnSTarantino.
Beautiful. You guys know my Instagram handle. It's @DaveGoldEvolve. And John, how about you just leave us off with a few words today on what your vision is for 2023.
Okay.
That's right.
The first thing that comes to mind. So continued growth and continued progress. So for me, we talked a little bit about work. I'm very focused on that. So taking the business to the next level and beyond, really focused on that, really growing that. And because I think, you know, it has the potential to really make a dent, in the universe's business. So that's number one, continued progress just with my, myself, my health, just kind of overall fitness wise, the gym, et cetera. All kinds of things, but yeah, just the first thing that came to mind was growth. So we'll, you know, in all areas. So we'll go with that.
Love it. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. And it's been great connecting with you.